for agreeing to give this lecture and joining us as part of the continuation of the Heart to Heart series. Most everyone in this room knows Dr. Pelkovitz. He really needs no introduction, but he's a real treasure and a gem that we have at our disposal in this university, both for the Torah insights, the psychological insights, the Hadrachim guidance that he's given me personally in my life, and for so many of us in this room through his speeches, through his meetings one-on-one. It's a real pleasure for him to address this topic about marriage, which is, he'll address some of the core values of marriage that in Yitzhak Shem, even if you are single, it's something that you can already start as an avoda to prepare yourself for that very crucial stage in life. Thank you, Dr.
Yeah, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. And again, my guess is that the majority of the people here are actually still single. I know there's some married guys, but so the focus is, hopefully this will be relevant to both. I was asked to focus on three ingredients, okay? Maybe use that as a springboard in the next 25 minutes to try to distill the essence of what's important. It's kind of silly. You know, I was, when Rabbi Bacon asked me to speak about this, I said it's like being asked to give a talk on Torah, you know? Give a talk on Torah, you know? So, but it was a good exercise to try to distill three core ingredients. So number one has to do with the issue of goal setting. You know, I always think about the three questions that Yaakov told his camp to prepare them for the fateful meeting with Esav. What were the three questions? Remember? It's, who are you? Where are you going? What are you going to do with what you have? And those three questions really fit beautifully in terms of this aspect of both the marriage, in terms of maintaining a marriage as it's going on, to keep on asking that question, because it constantly changes. Although at the core it's the same, but also when you're dating, when you're going out, when you're trying to find the right person, part of the work you have to do on yourself is to answer those questions. Part of the who are you question is, what are your uniqueness? What are your strengths? And there's a whole explosion in research in positive psychology now. Coming at it started at Penn, but it's happening all over the world, understanding how important it is to do cheshbon ha-nefesh, not only in terms of finding out what your flaws are, what you have to work on in terms of from a Musar standpoint, and in terms of knowing what midos you have to work on, but it's equally important to figure out what are your unique strengths. What is it that happens when you come alive? You know that you're exercising your signature strength when you ask your closest friend, when am I at my best? What am I doing when I'm at my best? And you yourself know it internally when you're able to answer the question by thinking, when is it that you're exercising a part of yourself that you don't get tired? You just get excited to do it. And for different people, it's going to be a different thing. It's your nigun miyuchad, you know, to talk about Rav Nachman's writings on this. What's your unique melody and your unique tune? For some people, it's going to be spirituality. It's going to be your Bein Adam L'Makom. It's going to be your davening. For some people, it's actually going to be literally music. For some people, it's going to be learning. For some people, it's going to be chesed. Everybody has it. I've never met a person alive, including adults with severe kinds of special challenges and special needs, who it doesn't become apparent pretty quickly what their unique signature strength is. And then, once you know that, you have to understand how to work synergistically with your wife or with the woman that you're thinking about marrying, because you want to be able to have somebody who's going to help bring that out even more and for you to bring that out in her. So that's number one. It's the goals. You know, it says in Mishlei, Be'ein chazon yifara'am. Without that vision thing, you lose sight of yourself. Your internal core goes. Now, part of this process is, what kind of a home do you want? For those of you who are still single, what kind of home? What do you want your Shabbos table to look like? What's your vision in terms of what it's going to look like and feel like? And in terms of a part of it which probably gets you nauseous even to think about, because it's not the developmental stage that most of you were in, to have a planned discussion with your parents and with those who know you best, to ask them, from what they know about you, what do they think is the best match for you? What do they think you need? What do they think your signature strengths are? And what do they think is the match that will complement it best? And you'd be shocked, and it shouldn't be shocking, at how you'll get incredible insights. But in order to have that kind of discussion, it means overriding the natural and totally appropriate pushback against doing it, because it's a little embarrassing, and you're not used to talking to your parents that way. Some of you are, but many of you may not be. But it's not a bad idea to do. I could almost guarantee you, you won't regret having such a discussion. I could go on and on about this, but I'll just say that to the extent that you could, for those of you who are married, as a couple, nourish your relationship by every once in a while taking a step back and saying, how are we doing? What is it that we need to change? Let's take stock a little bit. Because in the busyness of a marriage, especially at the beginning, you know, you're throwing yourself into parnassa and you're throwing yourself into raising children and into so many things that literally don't leave time to have a step back response to ask yourself the three questions. Who am I? Who are we? What am I going to do with what we have? What are we going to do with what we have? And where are we going? And there's all kinds of fascinating new research in the psychology of marriage that shows that when you're able to do, they call it, they always come up with boring and clinical names for these things, relationship maintenance. What it means is when you think about your marriage, you think about your relationship, or you think about how things are going with the woman that you might be going out with, it's actually a very healthy process, and it will help point to change that's going to help strengthen the relationship. So that's part one. And I'll just end with, I have so much stuff I could say, but I'm going to control myself. I'll just end that's enough. It's enough. Okay. Number two is ability to disagree in a healthy manner. Okay. So right until now, we were talking about something that's almost ethereal, almost like it's, what's this guy talking about, you know? Sounds like something that you wouldn't think would be that important. But let's talk about tachlis. If I had to think about the single most important predictor of happiness in marriage, it's how your partner deals with the inevitable conflict that's going to come up. And we know it's inevitable. There's a magnificent Tiferes Yisrael that some of you have heard me talk about in Yevamos, Perek Dalet of Yevamos, where he says the Hebrew word nesuin has embedded in it the following amazing wisdom. The inevitable difference between men and women, because there is an inevitable differences between men and women, can either be a masa, that's embedded in the word nesuin, is the word masa, a burden that weighs you down. But what else does the word masa mean, everybody? It means a song or something that can lift you up. It's the opposite of a burden. It's something that could be transcendent. How could it be? You know, what's the answer to this tarta desai? What's the answer to this inherent contradiction? But the answer in part is that what Tiferes Yisrael is telling us is it's up to you, A, to understand that of course there are going to be differences, okay? Men and women were, by definition, created in a way that we spend our whole life trying to understand and grow through understanding the feminine sensibility while she has to understand the masculine sensibility. I had a very sad phone session I did on Monday night. I do it once a year. It was speaking with 100 women who just in the last few months had lost a child. Some of them in late-term miscarriages, some of them, it's a support group with women around the world in the foremost Hasidisha community. And the number one question they had, their husbands were being incredibly supportive of them, But they were telling me they just don't get it. They just don't get it. And that seemed to be what they needed. You'd think that what they need to talk about most was their own sadness and their own grief and their own sense of loss. And it is a lifelong challenge for them on how to integrate that. But in the early months, right after a loss, what they were most concerned about was, my husband is dealing with this so fundamentally differently than I do. And that's normal. And that's the key. The key is, when you're going out, since most of you, since the Rov is here, are single men, when you're going out, to try to figure out if you could find somebody who's going to react to the inevitable differences, not with anger, not with rage, not with rejection, but with working with you, with being able to maybe cut you some slack, to being able to be mevater. You know, there are three words in the Sefer Chasidim that captures everything. Just think of the wisdom in these three words. Achris ketata charata. After argument, there's regret. And isn't that true? Think about the last fight you had with a friend. Think about the last fight you had with a parent. Think about the last fight you've had with a wife. There's almost always regret. And that's built in. You should expect to have conflict, because life's about conflict. Life is lamod b'nisyonos. It's going to happen. But the key here is to find somebody or to work on your relationship in a way that when you have the inevitable conflict, how quick is she to forgive? How quick are you to forgive? How quick is she to be able to see this, not as a sign that you're a horrible person, but as a temporary flaw that she understands because you're going through a tough time? And how quickly is she able to be able to look on the positive aspects of your personality rather than the negative and let go and move on? It's such a bracha to be married to such a woman. And of course, vice versa. You have to be able to do that in the other direction just as clearly and just as powerfully. So that's the second main point that I wanted to talk about is find somebody who has realistic and flexible expectations. And just remember that there's absolutely... not only should you not be surprised if you're having this, very often when you're going out, everything's wonderful and you don't have the opportunity to fight. But look for the way she's handling subtle disagreements. Look at how she handles conflict with other people. Look at how she handles the differences in you. What happens if you're late because of an unavoidable delay? All those kind of things. Look at it. If she has a temper or she's losing her temper, it doesn't mean it's a deal breaker. But the key isn't the conflict. The key is how the conflict is handled and the ability to not be sticky about it. Okay? So that's point number two. And the final point is the ability to bring out the best in the other, both in your marriage, but also as you're looking for the right person to spend your life with, which is the single most important decision you'll ever make. It predicts everything in life. Not to get you guys nervous, but it really, really matters. It really matters. And again, it can't be an algorithm. But sometimes there are warning signs. That's important that if you're having warning signs, you need to talk to somebody you really trust or to a number of people you really trust. And you want somebody where you're going to be better because you're with her. You want somebody who believes in you. Somebody who's going to bring out the best in you. Somebody who's going to somehow be able to take your side no matter what, while giving you mussar. But also somebody who you know really gets you and you're better. You know how you do much better when you know that somebody believes in you. For example, if you're talking to somebody and you know that they think that you're smart, okay? You know you're going to be smarter with that person. And you know that they think you're funny, you're going to be funnier with that person, okay? Because so much of our lives has to do with bouncing off of people who believe in us or don't believe in us. And I'm sure we've all had the experience of being with somebody who really thinks that you're dumb. Or really thinks that you're somewhat of a failure. Really thinks that you're not that funny. Whatever it is, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's amazing how the kamayim hapanim al panim in interaction, our hearts bouncing off each other, becomes so incredibly important. It's so important in a marriage and in a relationship to find somebody who literally believes in you, who literally believes in you, and who, because of that, is going to, you want to be the best person you are around that person. Now, that's built over time. It's not going to happen right away. But you want somebody who's going to be able, when you mess up in some way, be able to love you in spite of it, you know, or develop that ability and develop the ability to know how to look the other way and how to focus on the positive. So those are the core questions, the core points I wanted to talk about. So to summarize what we've been talking about, okay, what was point number one? It was goals and the importance of goals and the importance of asking the questions of who are you, where are you going, what are you going to do with what you have, and the importance of signature strengths. Point number two is what, everybody? Being able to disagree in a healthy way. Somebody who is going to disagree with you, because that's what marriage is, and you have to manage your expectations. Marriage is going to have disagreements. It's inevitable. It's going to have stresses. You're going to have the stress of moving into a new apartment together, the stress of financial stresses, or the stress of facing illness, or the stress of all kinds of complications in life. What you want is somebody who's going to be able to be your partner at your side, okay? And be able to lose it with you because you feel safe enough with him or her. But in spite of that, to be able to feel like a team. My father always says, couples don't have to think alike. They have to think together. And I think that's that second point. And the third point is the ability to bring out the best in each other. The ability to really be a better person, because that person really believes in you and is able to somehow literally be almost your best friend. And I'll just end with the summary of one of my favorite studies to talk about, which is a study by Pilmer. Looked at 1,000 old people who've been married for many, many years. Some of them have been married and divorced and remarried. But these are people who've been married for 60, 70 years or more. Okay, well, 60 or 70 years. And he asked these 1,000 people, this professor at Cornell, who's a geriatric sociologist, he asked them a simple question. After all your years of experience in marriage, what matters the most? And here's what they answered. Number one, you want to marry somebody who brings out the best in you. Point number three I just made. Number two, friendship over romance. You need to like each other. You need to enjoy being together. You need to want to share each other's lives with one another. You want to build the ahava, not just on the mutual giving, but also on the mutual give and take of being really interested in each other's lives in terms of being there for each other. And then, I think a very important point, which is don't keep score. What these people said over and over again is give 100-100. You don't give 50-50. You don't be a tally keeper. You say, well, look, I did this for you. I took out the garbage. Shouldn't you do the dishes? Or I just, was able to change my schedule around so we could go out to a restaurant. You know, when are you going to do something for me? You can't even begin to think that way. Your heart and your mind and all of your efforts have to be completely into giving as much as you possibly can. And when you do that and you're with the right person, she will do the same. And there's no better ingredient for a successful marriage. We have a few minutes for questions or thoughts. Yeah, please.
What do you do if you feel like you're giving 100% but the other person isn't?
And this is in a marriage already?
Yes.
So the question is, if you're in a marriage and you feel you're giving 100% but it's not reciprocal. The bottom line answer, I think, is you still give 100% and you do your best to focus on the positive that you get in the relationship. You know what the research shows? If you deliberately remind yourself of some positive qualities of your wife, You literally take a step back and you spend a few minutes every day saying, remember she did this for me? Remember she did that for me? And you just let that be absorbed by you. It could be incredibly helpful for the relationship. But, obviously, if it's something that's really bothering you, and it's of course there are going to be things that are bothering you, she may think she's doing more than you think she's doing, then what you need to do is have a planned discussion. You don't strike when the iron is hot, you strike when the iron is cold. You say, hey, look, I'd love to sit down with you. There's something I want to talk to you about. And then you calmly sit down and in a non-critical, non-emotional way say, you know, sometimes I feel it would really make, and I'd be specific, it would make such a difference to me if you did, you know, you pick one or two things you'd like her to do. Tafasta merubalo tafasta, pick maybe one or two things. And if it's done in a non-critical, a non-judgmental way at a calm time, hopefully she'll be makabalin. Okay, those are the two recommendations I'd make on that. Okay, so it's b'makom shemach shavta shaladam sham hunimsa ha'ish. So you literally, you focus and have some of your psychological headspace taken up by thinking about the positive, having hakara sato for the positive. But then you try to get her to work on it with a planned discussion where you don't bring in the kitchen sink. You just focus on maybe even one thing you'd like her to do, and then you take it from there. Okay, yeah, please.
When I spoke about all the things that a person looks for in a woman you're dating and you marry, should we assume that she's also hearing the same thing about what to look for in a man, and so to be that person as well?
When I speak to the women at Stern or at a YU Connects events or anything, I never quite give the talk exactly the same way, but I pretty much say the same thing over and over and over. And I'm always reminded of my mentor, Rabbi Dr. Twersky, who's written, what is it, over 50 books or over 60 books. And he always says he wrote the same book exactly. There's nothing new in any of his books. He just put them in a new key because he really has one message, right? The message of the importance of self-worth. So here, yeah, I think this, essentially these messages are given to women as well, okay? I believe, you know. I'll probably be giving a talk like this later this year when I spend a Shabbos on the Stern campus. So, yeah. I know it's not just Stern women, but certainly also at YU Connect events. Yeah.
How much are these unique marriage points, and how much of these general relationship points for any healthy relationship?
Yeah, that's a great question. What's unique to marriage is that it's just so central, and it's so all pervasive. You know, so like in a regular, it depends what your expectations are of friendships and of relationships. Okay, I think it's not a bad idea to bring this to parenting. At all. I gave a talk on parenting last night in Passaic where I realized that in different ways I made some of these points, okay? You know, if you believe in your kid and bring out the best in them, their behavior is going to improve, you know? And spending time with kids makes an enormous difference and all those things. So I think it probably is all encompassing. But with marriage, it has the unique kind of added challenge of This is the foundational relationship of your life. If you're happy in your marriage, you're likely going to be happy in life. Not guaranteed, but pretty much. And people who are unhappy in marriage have, you know, tavla mesav tanda mila mesav armalu. The rate of depression in people who aren't able to be happy in marriage is much, much higher. But the rate of happiness when you're blessed with the marriage with some of these ingredients is unsurpassed. And you live longer, and you're more successful in every area of life. So that would be my bracha to everybody. Thank you. I promise to get it done by 12:30. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. See, how you doing?
Good.
Oh, that was a great.